Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. It is Red Men Originals podcast time. I'm Paul Meacham, Chris Pajak, Dan Club, and the returning Ben Kelly, the prodigal son, back from abroad.
I'm not going to complain about that nickname. That's nice.
That'll do.
Yeah.
The prodigious son probably would have been slightly better, but nevertheless, he's here. We're going to talk about Liverpool and Manchester United because, you know, we kind of have to. It was the last match and that's the format of the podcast.
Yeah.
We'll also talk a little bit about Kenny Dalglish, who's going to be getting the Lifetime Achievement Award at Sports Personality of the Year, and look ahead to West Ham in the League Cup quarters on Wednesday night as well. But before we do, a couple of things. We've got a prize to give away. We've been doing our daily prize draws for all the legend subscribers over on Redmen Plus. Today's prize is Little at 100, signed by the author himself, Peter Kenny Jones. Boss prize.
If you're listening on audio, it's not about the supermarket chain, it is about Billy Little.
Both good books, though.
It might be both. I've only read half of it.
The second half really goes into the supermarket.
That chapter on the middle aisle.
It's a real
mixed bag. So we've got that. So let's draw that now for everyone who's on the wheel of names. So we'll get the wheel up and let's get a little drum roll going, please. Congratulations.
Well done.
Yes, you have won a signed copy of Little at 100. Well done. Dan will be getting that over to you as soon as is humanly possible. Congratulations. Do we know what else we've still got to come?
The Ibu.
Ibu Kanate signed shirt. When's that?
That's Christmas Day.
Cool. Yeah.
That'd be good drawing on Boxing Day, of course. Unless you want to come in Christmas Day and draw it, that is. Cali Prince, come over then. One more set of Beers of Anfield Road mats as well. Maybe a couple more books in there too.
A good week's worth of amazing Liverpool gear to be given away. So plenty of time to get yourself on the wheel of names for the remaining draws, including, as I said, the Ibu Kanate one on Boxing Day as well. So go to redmenplus.com and sign up. Another thing to tell you about, we have announced another date. Can I call it a tour now? We're going to three different countries. That's definitely a tour. So in addition to us going to play in Belfast and in Dublin, we've actually got an event in London as well on the 24th of April. So if you want to get involved with that, go to Ticketmaster. Just type in Redmen TV, which is just so cool. Or you can go on it's at the Indigo at the O2. So if you go on the O2 event webpage, you can actually see us there in the list of all the events as well, which is pretty cool. But if you're in London and you want to come and see us live and you were disappointed that we were only going to the Republic and Northern Ireland, well, you know, there you go. We're coming to London as well. So grab your tickets. Chances to grab yourself a little late Crimbo Prezi in there as well because, you know, you don't actually have to have a physical thing. You can just do that. It's great. So you go on to Ticketmaster anyway and search Redmen TV and all three of those events will come up. Yes. Right. Okay, we've procrastinated enough around this. Let's dive into it. Chris Pajak, it was a drab old game of football at Anfield as Liverpool drew 0-0 with Manchester United.
Yeah, the first 20 minutes, though, I thought we were brilliant. I thought we absolutely dominated them. I thought the atmosphere was there. I thought everything about us, the urgency from us kicking off, it goes out. Does it go out for a corner almost within 30 seconds or something? And everything just felt right. It felt like they were nervous. It felt like we were going to take the game by the scruff of the neck. And the more and more it went on without us scoring, you could see them getting a little bit of something from it. And ultimately, it does end up a little bit, a lot annoying.
Yeah. How are you feeling in general, Ben?
I think with the benefit of hindsight, having now slept on it, it's not the type of result that completely ruins a season, but it is very annoying, especially given City's result as well on Saturday. And because really, you know, obviously it's only a matter of time maybe until we have to start taking Villa seriously, but it's City and Arsenal that you're keeping an eye on. But really, still in the back of my mind, it's still only City that I'm kind of watching the gap still. And maybe that's wrong, maybe that's completely underestimating Arsenal at this point. We've got to play them on Saturday, so, you know, that'll be a big game now. But, you know, given that they dropped two on Saturday, Man City, that felt like a real big opportunity to go. Because whether we like it or not, City will just beat United at home. That's what they do. And when you look at, you know, as I often do, you look at how we're doing in games compared to them, you know, we'll pick up points where they drop some and vice versa. You know, United shit the bed at every single Merseyside derby at the moment, and City will just beat them at home whenever that game is. So there's 2 points potentially that we're going to drop in comparison to the corresponding fixture for them. So that's the frustrating thing. I don't think that in the context of our week, I think if we win on Wednesday and win again on Saturday, you know, and we've taken 4 points from the 6 league games, and we're in a League Cup semi-final on Christmas Day, and we'll be top of the league, we won on Saturday, I think we can all move on very quickly. And the other thing is, if you take it as if to say, well, if we'd drawn at Palace and then won yesterday, we'd all be buzzing now. And yeah, you know, it's 4 points in those 2 games. It would have been great to be 6, but you know, I don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, I think Dan, just give me your general thoughts and I'll pull it apart a little bit more.
Yeah, listen, it was very frustrating. It was quite a difficult watch at times because we were so dominant when it comes to sort of momentum and possession and all those sort of things. I mean, 34 shots, 8 on target. You know, when you look at 34 shots and how often we were getting the ball to our key dangerous players in the final third, you expect more. So it was frustrating. So often they made the wrong decision, they picked the wrong pass, or the execution wasn't there. And yeah, for some of the big players, I think Szoboszlai and Salah particularly had very poor off days by their usually very high standards. So really frustrating. But in the grander scheme of things, similar to Ben, having slept on it, I lived through it yesterday, obviously in the watch along and then the post-match stuff and then this morning again. But grander scheme of things, it's not a catastrophe. I think I often say you should be allowed to draw games of football, certainly when it comes to your rivals, albeit made all the more disappointing by the gulf in class between us now, because we're obviously so far ahead of Manchester United. We're clear of where they would like to be in terms of the league table and in terms of football clubs. But yeah, I think annoying more than anything else, but ultimately the type of result whereby if we can sort of put it to bed this week and pick up 2 big wins, then I don't think it'll look too bad.
I kind of tend to agree. I wasn't angry walking up the ground. I was just a bit like, meh. And it felt like one of them games that we've seen time and time again where, the fellas who sit behind me were talking throughout it, and like one of them's going like, one of them's quite a positive guy and the other one really struggles with the positivity of it all. When it's not going absolutely our way at all times, you get a bit panicky about it. But it's that notion of, so like, there's plenty of time. There's plenty of time, plenty of time. Now, what we've become good at under Jurgen Klopp is that being a thing. So there's always enough time for a goal. We'll always find a way to score. But this was just one of the games where we didn't. And it felt like that, you know, particularly with when there's like 60 minutes played and you're going, I don't really feel like we're doing anything here that's going to make us... I never felt confident that we were going to unlock them. Now, there's been plenty of those games where I've not felt that, and then we actually just have. Mm. But that was a real... Yeah, I was just a bit like... I didn't feel angry about it because... I'll be honest, I psyched myself up pre-game with the notion of the only way Man United could win that game was to win that game. And I knew they were going to go defensive. The closer it got to the game, it became quite evident that's what they were going to do. And as much as I'm seeing their fans almost celebrating it like a win, which I think is hilarious to have grown up in an era where Manchester United were so much better than us, and now we're in a world where they're like buzzing to get a point at Anfield, I think that there's, that's where they're at. And I am still one of those kind of people who takes enjoyment from Man United being shite. So actually, I'm annoyed that we didn't win the game, but also there's a little part of me that's quite morbidly quite happy with how happy they are with it, because it's a stark reminder that they're rubbish, and that doesn't put more points on the table for Liverpool. It doesn't keep us top of the Premier League table, but I can be a bit laissez-faire about the whole thing, and some of the points you guys have made as well, that if you told me start of the season, you're going into one game before Christmas, a point behind, you know.
Still four ahead of City.
And that's the key thing as well. Because I'm with you. I think City, although Arsenal are clearly a force to be reckoned with this season, and they're very much looking like the real deal, get me in a title race for Arsenal all day long. Like 100% City. They continue to drop points. We've got a chance to be even further clear ahead of them, because they didn't play now for 2 weeks, obviously, the Club World Cup and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, add a bit in your hand off for that. And that's important to remember. Like, we've sat here for weeks now saying Liverpool are ahead of schedule. How have we found ourselves top of the league when we were, of course? So we can't be too downbeat when we get a result like this. And especially against Manchester United, albeit a weak Manchester United, sort of nowhere near what they would like to be. But it's still Manchester United. And they're still going to fight tooth and nail to get a result. And they did that yesterday, to their credit. You know, they did show up and put in a relatively strong defensive performance.
Well, let's talk about Man United's performance, tactics, setup and what have you, Chris. What did you make of it?
It's fairly predictable, to be honest with you. I think we knew they were going to make it difficult for us. I think the big surprise for me came from how Liverpool decided to attack them more than anything. You know, the complete lack of Trent in midfield in the first half. Obviously, Trent just sticking to that right-hand side. I thought we knew what they were going to do. I thought Luke Shaw was going to stick to Mo Salah as strong as he could. And he's done well in previous games against Mo. So, but when I come back to my sort of general feelings on it, I've got to say, there's still massive disappointment there for me in the performance that we put in. Because I get the grand scheme of things, thinking and all that type of stuff, but they were there for taking yesterday. You know, had we been better, we'd have walked away with 3 points there. Had we made better decisions in the final third, had our forwards played better, had our forwards been able to put the ball at the goalkeeper more, put him under more pressure, like, he was there to be at. And that's the big thing for me. I mean, Mo Salah, Darwin Nunes, another poor game for both of them. And Mo, you mentioned it, man, Mo was atrocious yesterday. Absolutely fucking atrocious. Like, and I don't think game's been particularly good for, you know, 2 months now. Arguably all season, to be honest with you. But his impact has always never waned. But it is at the moment. He's starting to go through it. We know that Nunes is now a 10-game run without scoring a goal and stuff like that. If you want a challenge for the title, you can't have your centre forward going through a 10-game goal drought. It's just not gonna be easy. Now, we've recovered goals from midfield and goals from defenders in the last couple of weeks. We weren't able to get that today. That's when the forwards have to step up. They have to be your bread and butter. And when they don't score, your midfield steps up. Not four games on the bounce, your midfielders and defenders winning your games
and
of football.
And we were talking about this, about Liverpool overperforming the next G outside the box, but the thing is, it's still difficult. So if that's how you're planning on winning games, you're not going to win every game. It should be it gets you out of trouble every now and again, or, you know, at 1 in 3 you use that as a tool to win a football match. It's like set pieces. You know, you've got to have a full set of strings to your bow. My thing, again, go back to the lack of disappointment, or anger I should say, on it, Ben, is that United played park the bus tactics. And look, I think I said this in the post-match video, play football however you want. People can do whatever they want to get out of it. And I do find it a bit laughable for how they've been constructed. They're going through a bit of an injury crisis. They've got a bit of some problems. They're a mess of a football club, yada, yada, yada. You know, other better managers have come to Anfield and tried to stifle Liverpool to get out of there with a point. But we've come out off the back of what on paper was an easy run of fixtures that have actually ended up being quite difficult, because Fulham actually were probably the best footballing side we came up against in that period. And actually they got the goals to show for it as well. But what we did was we had two teams before that in Palace and Sheffield United who just mission was stop Liverpool from scoring and get loads of men behind the ball. And I've said this time and time again, we play Stoke and Burnley and God knows how many of those teams. West Brom would do it in alternate seasons. When a team that's got Raphael Varane at centre-half, and, okay, yeah, they're not the best Man United players of all time, but they've still got, you know, Amrabat, and they've got whatever in there. They've got good defensive players. Johnny Evans is a good defensive centre-half, and they're told just to defend. well, you are going to have a tough time breaking them down. So that's my kind of... it's not excusing the book, because I think Chris is right. They're there for the taking, but actually... they weren't there for the taking. They'd have been there for the taking if they'd come out and tried to play football against us. They tried to make themselves not there for the taking, and it worked.
But I think their injuries and suspensions made that very easy to see. I think, you know, if they had Fernandes available, if they had Rashford fully fit, you know, they would have...
I wish they had Maguire available, because they'd have probably played Maguire over Varane, because he's stupid.
Ten Hag would have had more of a decision to make if those players were available. And so, actually, his game plan and his setup was very easy yesterday, because, you know, the reality was that they didn't have the players on the pitch to have a real go. And to be fair, probably, I can't remember exactly, but sort of midway through the second half, three quarters through the game, there was a 10-minute period where they did start to play, and it became a bit more like a basketball game, and they had the chance where Alisson made the save. The problem is that they've got is that Antony has no end product. Mm-hmm. So he is the outlet, and he's fast at accelerating, and then people catch him, and he wants to cut inside, which Aaron Robin did for years, but the problem is that Aaron Robert could go the other way if he wanted to. Everybody knows that Anthony's going to try and cut in, and he does it every single time. Hoyland, you know, is obviously had a tough start. I think they should try and stick with him. I think there's something there with him, but obviously he has the chance, and he does a lot of things right, really, and Alisson makes a good save. But I think not particularly not having Bruno available, you know, we did kind of joke about it earlier in the week, but I think it did help them, because it just meant that he played three workhorses in the field. Amrabat, I thought, probably had his best game so far for United, and that Mainoo, both of them were on bookings from the first half, and I thought they both managed that very well. And McTominay, I think, you know, he's having a good season. I don't think McTominay's a bad player. I watch him for Scotland as well, and he's good. You know, he's important for Scotland, and I think actually we were joking about it earlier in the week, you know, people on Twitter and all that, but Bruno would have been a problem for them yesterday, because he wouldn't have done the running that the other three did. So I think it did help them.
Yeah, I mean that's right, isn't it? Ultimately, is that circumstances have conspired that Ten Hag couldn't afford to get battered because he just loses his job. Yeah. That's how precarious it is. You know, if they get another, like, it doesn't have to be a seven, then he's in a world of trouble. And Man United are in a huge mess. You know, we've done this a lot in the last week or two. They're in a weird position where they can't really sack him, because they're still waiting on the takeover stuff to go through, and who they want to take over, blah, blah, blah. But it actually conspired almost in his favour. It was a free hit for him to come to Anfield. And again, look how their fans are treating it after the fact. They're absolutely made up. So he's actually done the right thing. His standing's probably gone up off the back of that. Whereas he's going nowhere this season if that's how he's going to play. I mean, I don't think he's going to play that way every week. No. But you know,
no. But his hand was forced in the best possible way, wasn't it? In terms of that, those were the cards he dealt in terms of his team selection, obviously suspension to Bruno and stuff like that. And you're right, United fans, no one's even batted an eyelid at the fact they came to Anfield and put 11 men behind the ball essentially for the entire duration of the game, and even time wasting and stuff like that. I know Virgil van Dijk had to go at Onana at half time for the fact they played about 20 minutes worth of a first half. But yeah, United fans are absolutely in love with that result, because I think if they hadn't had the injury, say they've had sort of a full selection to choose from, they might have looked at it slightly differently potentially. But because of the problems they had facing that game, they've looked at it and gone, well, that's all he could do. Yeah. You know, let's get out of there with a point and sort of be happy.
If he'd done that with a full contingent,
different
available
conversation, potentially. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly with Bruno. But you're right, I think had Bruno been available, he would have been more of a problem to them, because he doesn't do the running, he doesn't do anywhere near like the work that those lads did yesterday. But I just slightly fall down with Chris in terms of United were pretty resolute defensively, and what they did do well was get back into shape when they'd lost the ball, so that transition was never really on for Liverpool. However, when we have such a lion's share possession and we enter their final third so often, and when that final pass was on so often, just badly executed or the wrong decision made, that's where the frustration creeps in, because Liverpool had the ball enough times at Diaz's feet, at Nunez's feet, at Salah's feet, at Sabozla, to hurt them time and time again, and we just kept getting it wrong. Not very often did a United player produce like a world class last ditch tackle, the denials or anything like that. It was us making the errors time and time again, and that's where the frustration creeps in.
There were so many of them, wasn't there? The one that stands out to me is Szoboszlai running between the centre half and the right back, and Salah with the ball at his feet, and he tries to play a right footed pass into Szoboszlai and basically falls over the fucking ball as he's playing the pass, and you're like, oh my God, it's just a really simple 5-yard pass. Yeah. And there were so many times during the game where Salah in particular did that, and you just like, you can't do that if you want to win the game. Szoboszlai and Salah were both shite on that right hand side.
Szoboszlai had two or three. And what's interesting about that is so much of our play was focused down the right because that's where Trent, Szoboszlai and Salah are, so why wouldn't you? But Trent, not necessarily in this conversation, but Szoboszlai and Salah having such off days, they were on different wavelengths. Szoboszlai tried a couple of flicks around the corner and Salah wasn't there.
He tried to beat a man and backheeled it away from himself.
Yes, he did.
Stinker in the first half.
Diaz comes into this conversation as well, because I thought Diaz had an okay game, but there were two moments, I think both in the second half, where it was one-on-one with Dalot, it was, and he could have gone down the outside of him both times, and he cut in, and I read it from the studio, let alone Dalot inside the ground, and he just took it off him both times. Go down the outside of someone, please. It was so, so frustrating.
Well, when Salah had it, and I know it's Kostas Tsimikas, but you look at where the play is, middle, and you're thinking there's two lads in the six-yard box there. If you just play a ball into Tsimikas and you know, the life it is. Yeah, you see what happens. Just like, it's so frustrating when I don't think it was because they played well that they got a draw. I think it was because Liverpool played badly.
Yeah, this is the thing. Being a team that's able to unlock teams that put 11 men behind the ball, that's the final boss in terms of becoming an absolutely complete football team for me, because I've seen loads of Liverpool teams that it's like you become a counter-attacking team and then you become a possession-based team and then you learn how to beat that. And that's like the final form, and obviously we're not quite there in that, but it's tough to know, in it, because the amount of people who just had bad games or off the boil. I think the substitutions are interesting, Ben, because I didn't feel like the substitutions made the kind of tangible impact that they should have done. And I think a lot of that's down to how we actually played football. Moving Trent into midfield, sound, do that. Bring Gomez on at right back, do that. But don't bring Gomez on at right back and then play the ball to him 40 yards deep of the touchline. Like as a flat ball or behind him, or that player to him so he's static. Let him play some war passes, let him get on the charge down the outside. That's how he looked so good against Crystal Palace the other week. He was a breath of fresh air, but instead we brought new players on to do the same shit, knock it side to side while they were all compactly, you know, kind of laid out inside the 18-yard box. No, none of the substitutions, what I'm saying, brought any kind of fresh ideas to the party.
No, and that's something that Harvey Elliott in particular has been really good at doing this season. But again, like against their game plan, I think it was, and better players, you know, it's going to be tough for them to do that, and you can't expect them to do it every week. You know, I couldn't quite figure out at one point what exactly we were doing. It looked like we'd gone 4-2-4 briefly,
and then
Jones was popping up on the left, and you know, I couldn't. It took me a while to try and figure it out, because Jones, I think, you know, for what he is now. What I perceive him to be, you know, I wouldn't necessarily have thought it was the right game for him yesterday, because what I find him is very good at doing is managing a game and keeping all the possession and doing the simple things right. And when you're pushing for a goal, I just don't see Curtis Jones as the type of midfielder you tend to bring on.
4 years, but you've seen Jota dribble with the ball out of Curtis Jones, and then we put him on left wing when we're chasing the goal.
But the options on the bench weren't great.
No, exactly.
Kids left after that, wasn't it?
So,
was Doke on the bench, sorry?
No.
Basically, Gakpo, Elliot, Jones and Gomez were the four players that were going to be used.
Bradley, McConnell and Quantrill left on the bench after our changes. And two keepers.
Two keepers.
So frustrating one, but I don't know. I said after 20 minutes on the watch along, and there might be a wider conversation about Darwin Nunes at some point, so I don't want to jump the gun on this too much, but it didn't feel like a Nunes game, even early doors, because there was just no space in behind, and that's where we know he likes to operate. I think Nunes of earlier on this season, who was doing a lot of the link-up play and the hold up the ball a little bit better than previously, would have been fine, but the minute he's not doing that very well either, it just felt like more of a Gakpo occasion. And I don't want to sort of dig him out too much, Darwin, because there have been improvements in his game, absolutely no doubt about it, since he joined the football club anyway. But I don't know, it's just games like yesterday where you look at him and look what he offers the team if he's not scoring. And there's also the added frustration of him being offside all the time, and he stops to try and win that penalty. There's all these little things that just sort of build up. He gets booked in the first half for kicking the ball away as well. And when you are in a goal drought, like you mentioned, this 10-game goal drought now, rather, and he's doing all this as well, you are looking at him going, I'm not entirely sure what you're bringing at the minute.
For me, him and we had the chat, we were sat here a week ago saying we were having the Harvey Elliott conversation, but like there's a Darwin Nunes conversation as well. I don't think Nunes or Szoboszlai have been good enough form to justify them starting that game of football. And I maybe there's just something to just play them through. And I do think Szoboszlai being so tall actually helps him sometimes as well. You know, just having another guy when they've got a bunch of big players on the pitch, it maybe helps us out. They think that'll help us out, keep us tight to the back and set pieces or whatever. But I'd have started Gakpo and Elliott in that one because that was the game. That was the game for them. Szoboszlai is in crap form. And I know we had this bit of an argument on, not argument, but disagreement on this last week. He scores against Sheffield United, but Szoboszlai's just been very average for a number of weeks for us now. And Elliott's looked a real bright spark. And then what? Now we're left in a situation where we're back to having the conversation around Arsenal. Does Elliott start Arsenal? And we'll all go back, but I'm not sure because now he's had a pretty indifferent substitute appearance between now and then. The Gakpo one, the central one, though, Nunes is well out of form. And that wasn't the game for him. I don't know why they chose him over Gakpo, other than...
It didn't make any sense to me, especially when, you know, I think if you're going into the game and you're thinking, well, Trent's going to go and play the inverted role, then you're going to have four men in the middle, then Gakpo's an extra body in there and maybe makes it compact. But when you know you're going into the game and Trent isn't going into the middle, which must have been the plan, having Gakpo drop in to be that fourth man would have made it much more simple for us.
It gets Luis Diaz more central, get him running behind as well.
Salah more central, exactly. So that's the thing that sort of baffled me after the game. I was like, well, if you know that Trent's playing on the right and you're going to keep him on the right, why did you go with Nunes?
And
you know that Manchester United are going to play a deep line and a low block, then the space isn't there. To be honest with you, I started the Nunes conversation fucking 3 weeks ago on this podcast, maybe longer. Like, he's been shite.
Yeah.
Like, and I said to you at the time when we were leaving the game, like, I'm all for supporting a player, like, you can scream his name. I'd rather scream it when he's scoring goals, and he ain't scoring goals.
It's telling that there's been the chance of Nunes have been far quieter in recent games. All right, mate, great. Nunes, go and score a fucking goal, will you, mate? And then we'll chant your name again. It's but the Gakpo thing, we do this. And Gakpo, when you play Gakpo in the nine, he's going to drop deep. You know, we could just say to him, don't. Play as a nine, mate. Actually hold the ball up on the edge of the box instead and look to bring people in, because, again, we're bringing Salah central to do that. We're pinging it to his feet and asking to get people off him. It didn't quite work out. We're looking for a bit more of that. But I think by that point, you've got Curtis Jones is playing left, Gakpo's playing on the right. Has he even done that for us before? If it is, it's minutes, not games. Because Gakpo's also, like, in the seven, you know, okay, one's cutting in from the left-hand side, but the other one is what we would see almost as an archetypal Darwin Nunes. It's, you know, it's over the top, it's into the box, thinking the keeper. That's a number nine's goal.
Gakpo can play whichever way he wants to play. My point about him dropping in was about, if you know Trent's not there, get your fourth body.
Oh, God,
I think Liverpool struggled to play through them centrally because they were a man down to what they've been playing with for the last...
He's just more quaint in that way as well. I feel like his touch and his ball control and his shielding of the ball, it's easier on the eye than Darwin, for starters, which, you know, it doesn't necessarily matter, but, you know, it feels like he's always got it under more control, and I just trust him more in the tight spaces personally. I just feel like, you know, when you've got Varane, I think that players like Varane and Evans, I think Darwin is a lot more predictable for them. When in situations like yesterday, where they're sitting deep and they just want to stay compact, I think Darwin. I think, having seen the team sheet, they'll have preferred to have seen Darwin over Gakpo, because I just think that they know what he's going to do. They know that he's going to be offside half the time, which is my biggest gripe with him. It's the most irritating thing, because it just halts all momentum. You can have the ball for 2 or 3 minutes. You can be building up, and you can feel like you can be really building up to something, and then he will just kill it with a silly offside. They're not even tight half the time.
Did you see the one where he was in their half, and I think it was Konate hoofed the ball down the pitch?
I was in the Anfield Road, so
he basically just didn't go back to our half, and he's flipping on Konate. I'm thinking, make an effort to get onside. Like, I know Konate shouldn't play the pass, blindingly obvious that, because he's 40 yards offside, but also, why are you there? Why didn't you just come back?
Yeah. He's quicker than most as well, so he doesn't need to be offside. Not just yesterday, just in generally speaking, he doesn't need to be offside
forever,
half the time.
We say this forever. We said this with countless strikers, and not just Liverpool players. It's like a thing, isn't it? Some players just get caught offside more, and it's a... Mm. Just are they just a bit dim?
If they change this offside rule to this Wenger rule that they're on about, where any part of the player is onside, it's a completely different story. He will become one of the world's best strikers overnight by simply having the benefit of the doubt more often.
Is this up there with Man United had to buy like three players to unlock Paul Pogba?
We need to change the offside rule to unlock Darwin Nunez.
Bigger goals as well,
he's struggling, isn't he, really? My point on the Gakpo thing was, if they're playing Nunez because they want someone to play like Darwin Nunez plays, I'd rather them just play Gakpo and tell him to play a bit more like Nunez at the moment than have Darwin
Gakpo
do it.
Gakpo scores his goals from number nine positions anyway. Yeah. It's just he drops deep, doesn't he, to be involved in the play, and then he swivels and gets in. You know, he ends up in the same positions as Jota. So yeah, I take the point. It's absolutely spot on, Paul. It was just a bit baffling to me. It's like, I know you can't compare football to Football Manager, but you know when you're in a bad rut in Football Manager and you just change the formation, that's kind of felt like what we did in the second half. Klopp, every substitution he's made, we had a conversation about it on the way to the match, this season he's been so much better, and last season with his substitutions, but it felt like we kind of, because of the limitations on the squad yesterday, the personnel that was available to us, Gakpo on the right, has he done that before?
It seemed
a bit nuts to me. And listen, I know about Salah's end product, you don't need to tell me about it, but he was arse yesterday, and I don't know how he stayed on the field, to be quite honest with you. And it is just, the only thing I can think is, his reputation kept him on the field. That's not right.
And to the point, because ultimately everyone else is crap, and who else was there? You know what I mean? You're right. I thought Diaz was playing well. I mean, I thought Diaz was playing well, but then I watched the highlights back, and we get the ball, we attack on about the 65th minute, and Diaz does that thing where you go, oh shit, here we go again. And you start to like accelerate really slowly towards an attacking situation, and I was like, that's what they'll have seen in him, isn't it? They'll have looked at him and gone, nah, his race is run. And that's the thing, you know, we forget this sometimes because we're all myopically, it's this game, it's got to be this game, we've put all our hopes and dreams, and look, a lot of us have probably set ourselves up for failure in the build up to this. And look, I was confident, I'm not going to say I can't go back and say I wasn't confident about this, because beating them in this game, but again, it's the whole banter side of, a lot of people I saw going, it's going to be 8-0, it's going to be 9-0, because if we can beat them 7-0 and we were crap and we're better than them, it never works like that, because it rubber bands, because again, Ten Hag's team selection is as much as circumstantial as a reaction to that. Pep Guardiola changed how he played at Anfield off the back of getting smacked a couple of times. He's like, well, I won't be doing that again. So ultimately I'm deeply frustrated and annoyed by it, but it goes back to the substitution thing, is Klopp's now managing an intense period of games, and as much as we always go, is he giving it up or whatever, there's just like, it's the sports science, isn't there? And it's like, someone goes, yeah, this is it, he's not playing any more minutes than that. By all means, run him into the red, but you're going to run him into the red for Manchester United and fuck him so he's not playing West Ham or Arsenal, which are actually the games that matter more. Not to us, you
it's
know,
a bit mad well. After a week off though.
Yeah,
that you cooked on 60.
I've
spoken to people as well this already today. You've gone like, fucking hell, we're just so much better when we play twice a week. And that might feed into it and stuff like that as well. It's frustrating, man. That's what it comes down to. We didn't take our chances.
Yeah. So back to second. I mean, I guess more riding on the Arsenal game now, Chris. So again, I think we said it when we were driving in. I was like, again, I'm weirdly not kind of that. It's fine. If you told me we had to beat Arsenal in that game to be top of the league, I can make my peace with that. It will add some extra spice to it. I think us being a bit of the underdogs therefore in it probably suits where we're at in our development to some extent as well. We're clearly not ready to be a team that goes in front and stays in front, because if we were, we would be, you know.
I don't know. It's a difficult one. I think regardless, Arsenal are going to come and play. aren't they? And that probably bodes well for us, because if we get into a basketball-style game with Arsenal at Anfield, I can only see one result, and I think the crowd gets a lot more into it. I think, you know, there's I've seen loads of people talking about the crowd yesterday. For what it's worth, from where I was, it was fucking superb.
Can I just highlight, actually, we had a super chat about that from the normal one, who says... what the heck was that atmosphere about yesterday?
I've seen so many people say this. Where I was, I didn't stop singing for 90 minutes, mate. And you know, Ben, you were in the Alley Road then, so maybe had a different experience.
I thought it was good to start with. I mean, you know, I think Gary Neville mentioned it, didn't he? And we will later in one of the, I don't know if it's this show or the other shows, we'll come on to the bell end of the week. but Gary Neville mentioned it in his, either in the coverage or his podcast that goes out on YouTube, and I think those quotes have circulated almost to give all of those people who say the Anfield atmosphere is a myth, they've now got that validation from somebody like Gary Neville to go, yes, exactly. Yeah. So I think that is part of it, and then that becomes from our fans, you know, maybe fears being confirmed. I was in the upper Annie. I was in AU6, which you know, I would say for like half of the rows they were sat down, but towards the back, like you sometimes get with towards the back of the cop, and you know, and more, definitely more centrally, everybody stood up for 90 minutes. I stood up for the first half, and then my dad, who was a few rows behind me, doesn't like sitting down, so he found a few seats further forward and I sat for the second. I can take or leave standing up at the match, to be honest. Like if I'm in a seat where I stood up, I enjoy it. Yeah. But you know, I'm not going to die on the hill. So, but I will sing and I will stand up if required.
Yeah.
So overall, I think that the, to answer the question, I suppose, overall, is the atmosphere in the Upper Annie was good for the first 20, like it was for probably three quarters of the ground. The cop is different. The cop is still different. It's always going to be different. And then I think as the game went on, there was frustrations, there was anxieties, and it just flattened a bit. And it didn't help that we had the away fans right there who were growing in confidence themselves the further the game went on.
Yeah. I thought it was electric to start with, as it always is, and particularly because of how strongly Liverpool started and how fast they started, and it felt like their goalie's going to chuck one in here because we're just on top of them. And again, it's how the game goes. We've had this before. It's different playing Manchester City than it is when it was playing like Chelsea, for example, like under Mourinho. So I remember the 13-14 season, we had Man City, it was one of the best atmospheres of our experience, and we beat them. And then you obviously have the infamous Chelsea game that follows. And the difference is, normally what we do is we sing songs, and then if you lose possession, you boo until you get possession back. Well, you can't do that when the other team doesn't have the football. So you've just got to constantly cycle through your songs. And we've also got that weird thing where we actually haven't got loads of songs at the moment, which sounds like an excuse, but the best of Liverpool in recent years, half of the players on the pitch had a song that we were all totally bought into, so we were dying to go through. Now it's like a half-hearted version of Ale, which we should really be keeping for Europe, so there's always a little bit of a sense of that. You belt Scouser Tommy out, and after people, you know, I haven't heard Scouser Tommy go well in like the time I've sat on the cop, so that's a thing, isn't it? And then again, you haven't even got that respite of you boo until you're ready to sing another song, and then you belt out another chorus or something, and then it becomes this perpetual thing. And then in addition, it goes back to United's tactics, which is where they got it spot on. That's how you quieten the crowd, you frustrate the crowd. We did get a bit tetchy, so that did kind of alter things a little bit, but it had its peaks. It's not like it died and stayed dead. There was some nice little peaks of righteous fury in there that I think got the team up and stuff, but then the crowd does so much, it's then on the players. As someone, it was ready to be lit.
Yeah.
If we banged one in, that the roof would have absolutely come off it. So I agree. I've seen this thing, it's becoming a narrative. We discussed it about a month ago. And I don't think the atmosphere has been brilliant, but we haven't had loads of big games at Anfield in that time either. And I've subsequently been abroad a few times and seen how other fans do it, and I'm envious of people who can go to the game and sing and chant and bang drums all game long, but that's not how English football is. So,
but there was still a period, certainly in the second half, when it wasn't going our way, when Come All Ye Faithful was sung for 10 minutes straight.
I didn't hear that.
Right, well, that got loud from where we were. I was right at the back of the cop, and that was at the most frustrating point of the game, where it was probably around the time where Errol's going to you, we're not scoring in this game, and stop speaking on the watch along.
Yeah. And yeah, didn't say another word.
12 minutes to go. Didn't say another word. So, but there was a good 10 minute period where it was like we tried the Liverpool chance. We tried the Liverpool chance, and nothing was sticking because of what you were saying about the songs that we've got available to us at the moment, and that one stuck. And everyone and the people in 305 just went, right, well, we'll just keep going because I can hear this and all that type of stuff. So I completely disagree with the fact that, you know, what people have been saying online about the Anfield atmosphere being shit. Where I was, it was as good as it, you know, as it normally is for those games. Obviously, goals make a difference, and you do need the team to light that sort of spark.
The Gary Neville thing as well is dead right. He presents himself as this, like, sort of bipartisan fan, and yet also
he's the most partisan.
Dearly clings on to the United thing as well, but then he presents himself like I'm going to tell you this fact about football, and even though I think he actually genuinely believes it, and that's what my issue with him is, that like Jamie Carragher knows what he's doing. He knows which way his bread's buttered, and he'll play the game. I think Gary Neville tries to play the game at times, but a lot of the time he's just a dead biased man, and he can't get away from that. That's why, and I know so many man, like my uncle's not coming to Boxing Day dinner this year, the United fan, because of a falling out on WhatsApp with my dad and my uncles over some fucking absolute nonsense to do with the football, and the fact that United aren't great, and I'm sure he just can't bring himself to be around us in this sort of spell. But you can't talk. Scousers and Manx can't have conversations around football around each other because we're so biased against each other club. So Gary Neville, any opportunity for him to spin the narrative to a positive, I think, and actually, if you can't do that, do something to dig Liverpool out a little bit.
The headline was, that's the worst atmosphere I've ever heard at Anfield. I mean, it tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, bollocks that, like. We had some super chats.
Joseph, I've been there when they've beaten us, right, and it's been much worse.
Joseph Clark says, I think there's been an overreaction from the media and our fan base. Can't fault the commitment/mentality. Just need some composure. I think there has been a bit of an overreaction to it, and again, it depends. I think a lot of people, Dan, did set themselves up for a fall here. And it goes back to that thing of, you know, it's like all the United fans who looked at where they finished in the league and where Liverpool finished in the league will have thought that this season was going to go much more in their favour as a result. Lots of Liverpool fans who saw the 7-0 would have thought, that's us beating Man United by five or more goals every time we play them now. That's not how football works either. So I think there is a little bit of that. But again, and I don't disagree with the end thing. If our players were just a little bit better, we probably would have got a little bit more out of it. But it's not a baby out with the bathwater kind of situation. It's just asking your really good footballers to get back to being really good again.
No, far from it, yeah. And it's not a catastrophe, is it? But I think so much of it was the fact they have been in the doldrums and they've been so good to laugh at in recent weeks and throughout the season, really, because their form's just been diabolical. And we, you know, whether it's by hook or by crook, a little bit of good fortune potentially along the way, but we are, you know, in a title race. So I think we expected to just put them to the sword and it'd be relatively straightforward. I think really, realistically, the talk of 8 and 9 was a little bit sort of dream world.
Yeah, I would say so, probably.
Remember, we beat Crystal Palace 9-0.
Yes.
And that was like, well, that's it. We're beating Palace forever.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
that's yeah. Football isn't linear.
Out of the FA
Cup. Football isn't linear. It just doesn't work like that, does it? As we've now seen, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think that was part of it. But we did definitely expect a relatively straightforward. And listen, it could well have been straightforward if our lads, our key players, who so often step up to the plate, certainly big games, had have showed that composure, that little bit of quality in the final third, especially early on when we were at their throat in the first 20 minutes. No, they were fragile, so nobody can tell me that if we'd have scored once, maybe twice in the first 20 minutes, half an hour, that could have been they could have crumbled, they'd fallen apart at one.
Yeah.
And the fans, you mentioned there, the fans grew in confidence, the players did as well, because all of a sudden it gets to half an hour and we haven't gone 1-2-0 up, and they're thinking, tell you what, gets to 45 minutes and so on and so on. So yeah, you're right, by the way, it's not a catastrophe. We need to do look at the bigger picture a little bit, but it was also very disappointing.
Yeah, and I'd also look at the way they set up. They did have decent players. You know, they had pace on the flanks. I know Hoyland's not scored for them, but that was a thing that was also hanging over the game. And I think Liverpool actually, they did restrict them. So, you know, I've seen other teams with worse players than that on the pitch come and play similar thing but offer more going the other way.
Yeah, he had one shot on target and you know, Alisson makes a really good save from Hoyland.
Right into the meat of the keeper, that, isn't
it? The other thing, apart from the fact that we've dropped 2 points, the other big thing that's pissed me off after the game is if we'd have won that... No, yes, actually. that's a close third. It's not being able to take the piss out of Anthony Moore for dummying the ball out of play. Because I would have just gone on endlessly about that. That was the worst dummy I've ever seen in my entire... What was he thinking? He's the right winger. He stepped over the ball and there was no one within 50 yards of him. Like, if we'd have won, that would have been on repeat at my house forever.
Yeah. It might be that he's fucking rubbish.
Yeah, and definitely that.
He's just rubbish, and that's
absolute snip at 80 million British pounds.
Carl G 1997 says, we've been due a bad result, to be honest, poor for a while. Yeah, I mean,
it's good that our bad results are drush.
Yeah,
yes, improvements.
Yes, yeah. I know, and I agree with that. I'd be interested to see what happens in the coming games, because obviously West Ham Cup game, you know, kind of one off.
Arsenal goes out the window.
Hey, why not? you know, but you know, we've got, you know, Arsenal at home with a really important, like, loads of stakes on that game. Burnley, I know it's Burnley, but it's, you know, they're a football playing side to come. We've gone through this like period of three consecutive bus parked games of football. So as much as it feels like to us, because we myopically watch Liverpool, is that Liverpool have been a bit poor. Again, I would say, to be a bit laissez-faire on it, it is hard to win games comfortably against teams that do that. It's, you need luck or magic, and eventually ours, when you go to the well enough times, eventually you kind of run out on that. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of Liverpool after this. But I don't disagree. I mean, that's the point, is that it's a week there where we've lost and drawn, so it feels like it's loads more, whereas in reality it was a dead rubber. We put the kids out in midweek, and then look, Man United, Manchester United were forced to come to Anfield and play effectively three defensive midfielders in front of a back four to try and not get battered.
And it is, I've seen us lose that game, like, traditionally against United. I mean, particularly away, but like there have been occasions at home where I've just seen us lose that game so many times against United specifically.
Well, I've seen us lose that game to fucking Stoke, Ben. Stoke.
That
was Manchester United doing it. And I said this, I don't know if I put it on Twitter, so maybe I'll stop myself because I just couldn't be asked. But like, imagine if Stoke had Raphael Varane, how fucking hard that would have been. You know what I mean? The guy who got the golden gloves in the Champions League, you know, he's garbage, like, but you know, all those things. Right, a couple more before we take a break. Regan, Sobers like in the six? Strength, speed, athleticism. I mean, feels like we need to get him further up the pitch.
I don't know what at the moment what Endo is doing to sort of deter anybody. I thought he was one of our better players yesterday. Yeah, I thought he was really good. Yeah. And we've actually not mentioned him, but I think there was one in that period where it had become a bit more open, where really strong tackle on our right hand side. Coming towards me, right hand side, sort of on the halfway line, really strong tackle. I think it might have been on Luke Shaw. You know, to win the ball, comes away with the ball, you know, doesn't just knock it out for a throw in, or the, you know, that's not the result of the chance. Stands up, comes away with the ball, drives on, you know. And look, maybe he's not the most complete number six that we'll ever see in a Liverpool shirt, but at the moment, like, you know, it's becoming a bit more of a prominent thing actually, because he's about to leave for the Asian Cup, Japan's captain, and as he continues to play in the team, actually, you know, I know we're losing Salah and we're not losing as many to AFCON than we have traditionally, but you know, he at the moment, I think, in terms of that position, I out of the three midfielders, I don't see
I've been a little that's disrespectful, is not quite the word. I'm just not absolutely enthused over him.
No,
I think he's fine, and I agree.
I
thought it was a really good performance from him. In terms of all the things that everyone thinks a number six should be doing, I think he did. You know, he went and won the ball back. He was physical. He was strong. He was a nuisance. I'm absolutely made up with all of that. But then I watch the Arsenal game and I see Declan Rice go past two men and fucking stride into the box, and you're like, they're the levels we're aspiring to, and we're playing the game with a guy who is what he is. He's a limited footballer. There might yet be more to come. But I'll be like, I feel like I'll be pleasantly surprised more than I'm expecting him to kind of.
But I'm not sure, to answer the question, I'm not sure Szoboszlai is the answer to that personally.
No.
Because, you know, really, you're going to limit him there. Maybe he's got better passing. Maybe he's, you know, from the quarterback sense, like Fabinho has done for us previously. But I don't think, in terms of the energy and stuff, I think you better serve with him further.
I had my first, like, thought that today of, like, imagine if we just still had Jordan Henderson. Now, I don't think we actually own Endo. If we keep Henderson, I think we might have done something differently there. But I'd have loved, you know, you bring Jordan Henderson on in the six in that game. You know what I mean, to freshen things up.
Maybe.
What else are you bringing?
One of him and Fabinho.
Yeah.
But this is the conversation. This was always going to come up once we'd started to have a feel like we were having a bit of a dip. It's all been quite quiet on these two until now.
Butternight asked what are your thoughts on Nunes recently. We've obviously covered that already, so thank you so much for your comment, mate. And AJ says, off topic, Mourinho's comments made me laugh on a podcast when asked who will win the league. He said City 50%, Liverpool 49%. And Arsenal, nah.
Yeah, it must be Villa, the other 1%. Then.
The league abandoned, that's what it would be. Okay, cool. Very short break from us. When we return, we're going to talk Kenny and West Ham. Hey everyone, we're deep into December. Our competition special is well underway, but don't worry, if you haven't joined up as a legend tier subscriber on Redmen Plus yet, don't worry, you can do now, and there's still plenty of amazing stuff to be given away. Like this, a signed Der Kuyt Liverpool 2007 home shirt. We've got the grand prize of a 22 Liverpool home shirt signed by Ibu Konate, and we've even got a signed goalie glove by former Liverpool goalkeeper Chris Kirkland, as well as a whole host of other amazing stuff. So plenty of goods up for grabs. Head to redmenplus.com. Get your name in the hat by joining as a legend tier subscriber.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yes, welcome back. Let's move things forward. Kenny Dalglish has been given the Lifetime Achievement Award, the Sports Personality of the Year Award, which is Tuesday. That's going to be happening.
Spoilers.
Yeah, I know. I did find that a bit strange. I saw like Klopp was doing a video for him. Like, have I missed this? Normally, I don't normally care, but there's normally a little bit more of a fanfare around it being on. But no, it's like been told ahead of time. Can I just say, nothing better than going to an awards ceremony knowing ahead of time that you're going to win an award, the best type of awards to go to. None of this sitting there waiting and crossing your fingers and having to psychologically prepare yourself for two possible outcomes. So yeah, good on. I mean, just briefly on Kenny, Chris. I mean, we're not going to add anything new to the praise that should be heaped upon Kenny on a daily basis, but legendary footballer, legendary manager, and ultimately legendary human being as well.
And that it's the final one that, you know, I think he's been given the award for more than anything, isn't it? Obviously, you can talk, there's loads of good footballers out there, there's loads of good managers, there's not many that have been given the Lifetime Achievement Award, and what sets him apart is the person that he is.
Yeah, 100% on that. Yeah, I mean, it's one of them where our era of football football was, I caught the very, very, very tail end of his career, but he was really more manager than player at that point.
Well, I'm a month older, so I saw a month more.
yeah. He was good in that month as well.
You should have seen Kenny in his mum ball. Oh, you wouldn't believe it.
Back in Christmas Day.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, again, he leaves Liverpool when we're like eight. You might have been, depending on, I think at the time of year, you might have been nine. Yeah, and obviously, yeah, what we all know, and it's one of the things that's mentioned in the BBC article around him, is how he conducted himself post Hillsborough disaster. He was effectively a shoulder of support for so many bereaved families, which you talk about this, it goes Every above and them. Beyond. Yeah, it goes above and beyond. It goes above beyond what you'd ever think about, you know, expect from footballers. So, yeah, absolutely brilliant human being. Right, we'll move things on again then. West Ham, League Cup quarterfinals, Ben Kelly. Mm. Is this more or less important off the back of the Manchester United game?
That's a very big question. I think it is less important. I'm in that Ooh. Camp. I think I would, if I was given the chance now, not that I ever want to, but if we went out on Wednesday but won on Saturday, I would take that deal, personally.
Okay, so you can go into both games and win both games.
I can do that, yeah. I would love to do that.
You could, No. Yeah. Like, these are your options. Okay. Take your chance.
Yeah.
Or lose the midweek game, but you win the league game. You're picking that.
Guaranteed.
I think I'm picking that, yeah. And only because I just see now, it is tough, but I think with the way, with the opportunity to put as many points on the board ahead of City as we can, particularly while they're in Saudi Arabia, and you know, games in hand are one thing, but points on the board are another. And to, I think to beat Arsenal would be a bigger statement than to have beaten United would have been. Mm. And I'd be interested to hear other people's opinions, because do you think that the result yesterday affects the team that he puts out on Wednesday now, or do you think that the plan will remain
the
same?
I think he knows what the team is for Wednesday and knows what it is for Saturday.
Yeah, I don't think that changes necessarily.
No.
Dan, what would you do if you could have, you could go into both and not know the results, or you could take the league win and lose the midweek?
I'm taking my chances. I think we need a win, to be honest. I think on the back of two not wins, albeit one a dead rubber, I think we need to win a game of football, certainly at Anfield, because that breeds confidence going into the weekend as well. I think if suddenly you're three games removed from winning a game, that's not great for a start. And I just also, like, the league sort of title race is one thing, and obviously it's a huge thing, of course it is, but I think getting something on the board in terms of trophies as well early on the season can sort of kickstart what is then the business end of the campaign. So yeah, I'd be all in the camp, and the League Cup's opened up nicely for us as well, really, in terms of the teams left in, obviously City out of it and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean you want to win every single game of football you possibly can, and I take the point, and you know, it's a perfectly fine point of view to have, but I'd be going all out for both of these. I'd take my chances.
The reason I put the question in is almost because I wanted to know what you guys felt about like whether it's more or less important, because, I mean, this might be the record for the latest we've ever almost written off the League Cup. You know, I've gone, well, we could do with not having that because we've got to focus on it. We've got a league title to win. I still don't feel like... because I don't feel like we're ready to win the league, even though we're there. And by all accounts, if we just carry on doing what we're doing, we'll be right in the conversation by the end of the season. I don't think we can afford to turn our nose up at the chance of winning further silverware yet. And I think this team, there's young players in this team, the new ones we bought mainly, need to know what it feels like to win a trophy for Liverpool, because, you know, like Salah might move on in the summer, and Van Dijk's another year older, and you know, does Alisson, what happens with Alisson over the next coming years, we don't sort of know. And then those like seasoned pros, I think the ones that stand us apart from Arsenal, they've not got loads of time in them, so you need to jumpstart the other lads, the new signings, as much as quickly as you can. Now I'm not, you know, again, we're not doing an open top bus tour for the League Cup. It is very much, it's a starter, isn't it? It's an amuse-bouche. You know, you need to have it in accompaniment with something else. So yeah, I would be all for keeping our options open.
It's bread with a soup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, it adds to it.
It's good.
Bit of people scoff at bread and butter. Bread and butter is good, you know, cups of Liverpool's bread and butter. I mean, just find a way to win them. You know, if we come away from a season where we've managed to win some a couple of trophies or even a trophy, it's a better season than not, because we could still find, because if City get their act together at any point, I still think they're better than us and Arsenal. And there's nothing we can do about that, because we just might not be capable of putting down a 15-16 game win streak, let alone unbeaten streak. So yeah, I think safeguard your future as much as possible. So I would be I'd be saying try and win both. And just the last thing on this is, because I think where we've fallen down in the last few weeks, I think we've been rotating to make sure we've got all these, as many plates spinning as possible, but we're about to reach a period where I think Klopp goes back to Klopp and asks the lads to hurt. And the best way to do it now, Arsenal haven't got a game midweek, so there's no team you can put out for that West Ham game that isn't going to mean that it hurts. Arsenal hurts at the weekend physically. So just turn around to the lads and go, right, come on, this is it now. You're all ready to go. We're all just going to fucking get in on this
one. I am tempted by it. If you change the question... No, I won't. I didn't take a draw before City. I wanted to spin before City, didn't I? Yeah, I would not accept that fucking a draw away at City. Yeah. I was like, no, if Liverpool got a chance to win, I'm fucking taking it. So that stands. But if you'd ask me now, the FA Cup game in the league... And you can obviously that's a different thing altogether. Like, you know what I mean? Because we're too close. I think Liverpool can beat West Ham, and I think Liverpool can beat Arsenal as well. Yeah. That's the other part of it. With both games being Anfield, I trust that Liverpool can do both. So I'd never settle for just one win in them.
Yeah, we can put our strongest team out next week against Arsenal with a week off and still lose, because Arsenal are a really good team. And we talk about the quarter final. I mean, look, just to go first for people who aren't familiar with it, because we've had a bit of like, who's still left in this? So it's Everton, Fulham Tuesday night, and Port Vale, Middlesbrough. And then the Wednesday games, Chelsea, Newcastle, and then us, West Ham, follows on the Wednesday. So like Chelsea and Newcastle, they're the two teams you want to avoid, and one of them's going out.
Play alongside this, sign your kids the next round, it's fine. We'll still get through to the final.
Well, this is It's
what I'm aware of is that West Ham are playing their strongest 11. Like West Ham are in the mix for a trophy now. So I'm interested to know what team people think he's going to play, because West Ham are coming to win. West Ham will be recognising that we've got Arsenal at the weekend. They've just beaten Tottenham away, having gone 1-0 down. I know Tottenham have got injuries, but that's no mean feat. They are a bit random, but you know, they battered Wolves at the weekend.
Can I offer you something to change your mind?
Absolutely.
Would you mind just bringing those teams back
I'm
up
always,
for me?
I'm always open to negotiation on these things.
No, I've lost it.
You've lost it. Okay, so... Bear in mind here that Everton are the form team out of these. Can you put them back on the screen for us, Joe? Everton, Fulham, Chelsea, Newcastle, both, you know, Newcastle's horrendous injury. If Liverpool go out, who's stopping Everton win that competition?
Newcastle.
You hope. Would you like to take that risk?
I think Newcastle would beat Everton over two legs or over one leg at Wembley. Yes.
Okay, so you're not worried about Everton winning a trophy because we went out?
West Ham might.
Yeah,
Everton losing in a League Cup final to David Moyes' West Ham. The reigning Conference League holders.
I'll tell you what's better. Everton losing to Liverpool in the final.
Oh, God, yeah.
So let's just not take that off the table. That's all I'm saying.
That's a good point.
I'm up for a January two-legged semi-final against the Ev. That would be that would be good fun,
yeah.
Matt. So, yeah, look, this is the problem, is the league thing. And I know we get really sort of lost on it, and I totally agree with this idea of, yeah, let's go for it. If you look at it, just look at it one game at a time, I think we'd have been going into this game regardless, going, right, it's a good opportunity to get progress in a competition. But yeah, when you start to go, like, we can guarantee a win and go top for Christmas, that does make me
it's not having the points in the back. If we win yesterday, and then I'm happy to take the draw against Arsenal, because then we're still top, you know what I mean? Like it's the same 4 points, but because we don't have the points in the bag, you're then going, well, if we'd won yesterday, you then go, right, well, let's go for it, West Ham, because you know, we can afford to draw on Saturday in theory. You know, you want to beat them at home because you've still got to go, because we play Arsenal as well, I think, the first weekend of February, so we do play them three times in a relatively short space of time, and then we can just forget about them.
Take the two league wins and give them the FA Cup then.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. That sounds like a good deal for me. I'm sure they'll go along with that.
100%. Yeah.
Sounds. Get Nickel on the phone.
Thanks for texting
that. Yeah, 100%. Right, cool. What do you think on that? What deal would you be taking? Would you be dealing with the devil? Would you be leaving it to the hands of fate? / the 11 lads that are going to take to the field, like always. Let us know in the comments section underneath on that, if you would be so kind. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to drop a like. And if you want more from us, we're carrying on. We're going to be doing the Bias Football podcast. We're going to be talking about the other fixtures that took place this weekend, which is always very interesting indeed. So yeah, come and join us on redmenplus.com for that one. And other than that, we will return with more content later on in the week, of course, with West Ham.
It's a very short show, isn't it? In the toilet.
Because you wanted to go home early. There we go. There you go. Chris wants to get off, so if you're not happy with having a show
this
the podcast...
This plans and someone put it in the diary that we're working late.
3 weeks ago. Right, see you all very soon.
Before that.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.